Howdy. You guys, a few years ago, when we started making good money, one of my biggest concerns was, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to pay taxes on this money. Let me tell you, I mean, I'm not giving tax advice, but for the first 2 years that I made a six-figure income, I never paid a dime to the government in taxes because of the information that I learned. And one of the key people that helped me learn this information is here today. And in the 10 years that I've been in prepaid legal, we've never, ever had him out here to Utah to do this for us. And it'd be good to get him at any point in the year, you know, July, August, September, but to get him here at the very, very beginning of 2010, so you can take this information and apply it to some of the things that happened in 2009, but then utilize it for all of 2010, it is worth thousands of dollars to every single person in this room. Not only that, but the people on your team. And if you got people on your team like I do that missed this event, I mean, they just wrote the government a check for thousands of dollars they didn't need to. They just didn't need to. And so with that said, let's give it all up for Mr. Ron Mueller.
I guess it's my clicker. Do I need to be up here or can I get down here? Good. I wanted to kill myself coming down like it started going up. Okay, let me first just make sure I know how my clicker works. Forward means forward, back means back. Let's try something. Oh, okay. Hey. I'm as dumb as I thought I was. Hey, I really want, I do a lot of presentations for prepaid legal groups. And I just want you to appreciate what you have in Mr. Dave Hall. I don't know anybody who is a better role model or better example of what really is possible. I now use Dave Hall's name when people say prepaid legal doesn't work. Say, oh, really? I mean, didn't this cruise beat the heck out of delivering pizzas? Wasn't it a little bit more fun than Jiffy Lube? And do you have to go to college for it? Do you have to be trained by it? All you have to do is learn how to do what successful people do, right? And I think that's why the more educated and the smarter somebody is, the less likely they are to succeed because they keep thinking they can do it better. You need to do it better. You guys have been doing acknowledgments for some time. That's going to be a hard act to follow. But I want to do my own acknowledgment. Coming in number one at biggest pain in the ass in America, the IRS. That's my... And actually, they won 1 through 10. They had all 10 positions filled. So this is going to be a hard act to follow, but I got some good news for you. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a CPA. I'm not an accountant. I never worked for the IRS. So I speak English. I've never learned those foreign languages. We're not going to talk about taxes today, but we are going to talk about saving money in taxes. Anybody want to save some money in taxes?
Yeah.
Anybody want to save a lot of money?
Yeah.
Anybody wouldn't answer no matter what I asked? Okay. Okay, let's talk about how to save some big money in taxes with the with your prepaid legal business. Because as Mr. Hall said, what everyone is striving for is what he's got, the $1 million ring, right? And when you make $1 million, if you don't have your taxes under control, you know what you are? You're a half millionaire. At best. The IRS will take away at least half of your money. Unless you learn why you're getting to that point, how to keep some of your own money in your own pocket. And that's what we want to talk about a little bit today. But before we can really talk about how much we're saving in taxes, we need to know how much we're paying in taxes. I won't embarrass the people in this fine group today by asking this question, but in some groups I used to ask, how many of you know how much money you got in refund last year? Most hands go up. Probably most of you know, right? Then I'd ask, how many of you know how much you paid in taxes last year? Very few hands go up. Except for once in a while somebody will say, I didn't pay anything in taxes, I got a refund. What? That's like going to the grocery store, and when you get through the checkout line, they tell you how much it is. You hand them all the cash in your pocket, and they give you back a $5. You say, how much do groceries cost? Nothing. I got a refund. So I've realized, though, I realized why people don't know how much they're paying in taxes. God built the human body in a way that we avoid pain. It's painful to look at our pay stub, isn't it? To see how much of our hard-earned wages got sucked out of there before we got to live on the leftovers called our take-home pay. It's painful to do that. So most people have no clue how much they're paying in taxes. I want to give you a rough idea, though, about how much you're paying in taxes. When you sit down at the kitchen table and pay your bills each month, what are among your biggest expenses? You know, for a lot of people, it is their mortgage or rent. It's housing costs. A lot of other people, it's their food. It's everything from groceries to meals out to drive-thrus to McDonald's to vending machines, what have you. Food and beverage is one of the large expenses in our budget, right? Another large expense that's always up there is your car payments, whether you're buying or leasing, right? That's one of your big expenses. And getting in that top group now is healthcare expenses for a couple of reasons. One is because we're more and more of us are having to take over our own, pay our own premiums to have health insurance. A lot of people don't have health insurance at all, and so it's all their out-of-pocket expense. Insurance companies are quietly moving some of the high cost covered expenses to the non-covered category. Have you noticed that? They don't tell you until you turn in a claim for your child's orthodontics bill for $7,000. They say, we don't cover that anymore. That's happening a lot. And so we're paying more and more in healthcare costs. We're going to talk more about this a little bit later. But that tends to be one of the largest expenses when you think of healthcare in a broad sense as all the money you spend on goods or services for the purpose of treating or preventing a condition or illness. Under that category, Band-Aids qualify, as does orthodontics and chiropractic and what have you. So that's one of the big expenses. Well, guess what? You ready for some shocking news? How much are you paying in taxes? More than you're paying for housing, food, transportation, and healthcare combined. Combined. If you got to bring home all of your wages and nothing was taken out, and then you sit down at the kitchen table to fill out to pay your bills, that would be way above, it'd be a clear number one in the list. And two and beyond would be distant, they'd run distant second, third, fourth, fifth, et cetera. That's how big it is. That's why our government, to help us out, has come up with this polite little plan called payroll withholding. So we don't notice how much they're sucking out of our pay. But that's how much it's costing you for taxes. So, you know, taxes are by far your largest single expense. When I ask people what's your largest single monthly expense, they'll come up with things like housing, cars, et cetera. But in almost every case, they're wrong. It's almost always taxes. Taxes have been bleeding us to death. And the thing is, most people don't even realize it. Because they don't realize, they can't figure out why their money isn't going so far. If I'm making such a big salary, how come I'm always broke? Well, maybe because Uncle Sam's taking more than he needs to of that money. But the good news is that with a home-based business, you can slow down the bleeding. If you consider paying taxes to be bleeding, which I do, I don't know that you can stop the bleeding, but you can sure slow it down. And the best way to slow it down is with a home-based business. It's the biggest of all the tax breaks in America. See, small businesses like a part-time premium legal business, you get all the same tax breaks big businesses get, except we get some extra ones. So it is the best deal in America is to, if you want to keep more of your own hard-earned pay in your own pocket instead of letting it go off to Washington where they can waste it, that was an editorial comment. I didn't really mean that. They're good stewards of our money, aren't they? Right. Here's what congressional law now says. It says that any taxpayer who runs a legitimate home-based business, either part-time or full-time, in order to qualify for the tax break we're about to talk about, we only need to do two things to qualify. The first one is to run our business on a regular and consistent basis. Now, when Congress passed that legislation, they didn't define what they meant by that. And it's kind of hard to meet rules when you don't understand them, isn't it? Don't you love it when you're driving down a road in a strange town? Last night I was here in Salt Lake City driving a rental car, and it's dark at night. I see the big sign saying speed limit strictly enforced. What do they never tell you on that same sign? What the freaking speed limit is. Jeez. So Congress passed this regulation saying that, by the way, what do we do when in a situation like that, what I did and what most people do is you guess what the speed limit is. I guess it was probably, I don't know, 50. So to play it safe, I said, 45, and so I downed it to 40. until I saw the sign saying 60. Then what did I do? What do most of us do with our tax deductions? If we're not sure what the law really allows, we go on the conservative side, right? That's why we're wasting a lot of tax deductions, because nobody's ever told you what these tax breaks are or how to qualify or what records to keep. They'll tell you in any business, including this one, they'll tell you on day one in your initial training you get a lot of tax breaks with a home-based business. But it's a very rare person who's ever been told what those are. Regular and consistent basis. When they after that, the legislation was passed and sent over to the IRS to put in the tax code. The IRS didn't define it either, because the IRS never defines anything. See, they want us to stay in the gray area, because from the time we're old enough to read a newspaper or watch television news, they try to convince us that if we make a mistake on our tax return, we'll go to jail. Mark my words on this. Sometime between the end of March of this year and around the 10th or so of April, somebody, some high-profile American will go to jail for tax evasion. It is not a coincidence that that happens every single year right before the tax filing deadline. They want to send a stupid signal that you make a mistake, you're going to jail. No, these are people that are outright tax frauds. They're going to jail. Remember Leona Helmsley? Some of you remember her? Leona Helmsley was convicted in July. She didn't go to jail until, guess what, April 2nd, the following year. That's not a coincidence. The IRS wants you to be afraid of the law. The thing is, what do we say in prepaid legal? When you understand the law, you don't need to be afraid of the law, right? If you understand it, and by understanding it, then you follow it, you don't need to be afraid of it. Okay, so unfortunately, this may come as a surprise, but our friend becomes the tax courts. The tax courts is where a lot of things are defined finally, and they did in this case. A woman took the IRS to court because the auditor said you didn't work your business enough to qualify for a home-based business deductions, and so disallowed all of her deductions. She took them to court, and the judge asked her, how much time you spend working your business? And she said, an average of about 45 minutes a day, 4 to 5 days a week. About 45 minutes a day, 4 to 5 days a week. He said, well, first, I need to ask you, other than your word, which is good when you're a sworn testimony, your word is good. But he said, what other evidence do you have that you worked your business on a regular, consistent basis like that? And she said, notes in my day planner. Would that help? The judge accepted that. Her handwritten notes in her day planner, he accepted as full documentation. So you need to be able to prove that you qualify for these tax breaks. So prove that you run your business on a regular and consistent basis. Next thing a judge said was that, he said, my job as a judge is not to determine whether or not 45 minutes a day, 4 to 5 days a week is going to make you financially successful. My job is to determine whether or not you're meeting the intent of Congress. Are you meeting the intent of the law? He said, I find you do. So we don't really have a definition, but we know that if you're working your business at least 45 minutes a day, 4 to 5 days a week, and you have some kind of record of that, even in your own longhand, either in your computer and longhand in your day planner or whatever, you cannot lose this deduction. You cannot lose this qualification that you see up here if you do that, because that was a precedent-setting tax court ruling. Many tax court rulings are not precedent-setting. They can't even be cited in future tax court cases because the situation is so specific. It only applies to one taxpayer. That's not the case with this one. If you work your business at least that much on a regular and consistent basis, an auditor cannot disallow your deduction under this requirement. Second requirement is very cool. Second requirement is the intent to make a profit. There are only two requirements. Working on a regular and consistent basis would be trying to make a profit. The key word here is intent. The day that someone signs up, if there's a prospect in this room, somebody in this room who, when you get in, you'll understand why we call you that rude word called prospect. But if there's somebody in this room who's not yet in prepaid legal, if you choose to join today, and you say today, I'm doing this because I want to earn a lot of money like Mr. Hall is, that's a profit intent, right? If you say today, this last couple of hours I've spent in here qualifies as 2 of the hours I'm going to be working this week, guess when you qualify for these tax breaks we're about to talk about? Starting today. Starting today. In fact, every single day you delay making a decision costs you about $20 That's how much you're overpaying in taxes. So here's what it feels. If you're here and you're not an associate yet and you want to think it over, don't let anybody pressure you into deciding before you're ready. But starting tomorrow morning, starting Monday morning, do me a favor. When you get up in the morning to go to work, just before you go out to get in your car, open your kitchen window and throw a $20 bill out the window. Watch it blow away in the breeze down to your neighbor's house. Then Tuesday, do the same thing. Open your kitchen window again Tuesday morning. Throw another $20 bill out the window. Watch it blow away down, in the breeze down to your neighbor's house. Your neighbor will be fortunate, but you will not. But do that until you realize that's what it's costing you to not have a home-based business. About $20 a day. That's how much we're overpaying our taxes in most cases. So the profit intent is the only thing required. Ultimately, they want you to become profitable. We'll discuss why that is. But profit intent is all you have to do to qualify, just these two things. So Congress says if you do just these two simple things, what will we do for you? We'll let you qualify for enough new additional tax deductions to increase your tax refund by an average of $3,000 to $6,000 a year. We're not talking about $3,000 worth of tax deductions. We're talking about $3,000 worth of money coming back to you. Tax refund is much different than tax deduction. That's what this one is worth. See, I'll get into that in a minute about why that all took place. But here's the here's a little bit of background. Why did Congress pass tax breaks specifically for home business owners? There are two reasons primarily. One, which is not the most important one, is they recognize that virtually all large businesses start off as a small business. Bill Gates started off Microsoft as a part-time business in a garage. Dave Hall started off his business delivering pizzas and working at Jiffy Lube. I mean, everybody starts small. So Congress is saying if we can get more people to start a small business, some of them are going to grow. When they grow, they're going to pay a lot of money in taxes. But the more important reason why they passed these tax breaks was they said that if we could ideally get every taxpayer to have a part-time home-based business that they could ramp up to full-time on short notice if they had to, it provided a great safety net for our economy. See, if you go to work on a Monday and find out that you don't have a job, pardon me, I'm a heavy drinker. If you did you set that out there in case I needed a backup? What was I talking about? Was anybody listening? Oh, yeah. Yeah, heavy drinker. It looks just like water, doesn't it? Okay, if you go to work Monday and find out you don't have a job because your company got upsized, downsized, capsized, whatever it got, what you got was unemployed. Congress said if you have a part-time prepaid legal business, they didn't insert that part, but they should have, instead of coming home and looking up the address of the unemployment office, they'd rather you come home and look and ramp up your part-time business to full-time. What's the only thing keeping you from going full-time in prepaid legal? That nuisance job called a W-2 job. That JLB that just over broke, that you drive to Monday through Friday working for an employer that probably doesn't appreciate you. So if you suddenly had all your time free, don't you have a prospect list that is longer than you are able to get to right now? That's the primary reason Congress passed these tax breaks. They said if every American taxpayer had a part-time business they could ramp up to full-time that they own, their own part-time business, it'd provide a great partial safety net for our economy. Because small business is the engine of the American economy. It's big business that got us into this recession. It's small business that's getting us out of the recession. So Congress said, I don't usually use wise and Congress in the same sentence, but in this particular case, Congress wisely said, we need to figure out a way to get people to do that. No, really? The people that are busy and don't have a part-time home-based business, how do we get them to want to do that? Well, to get anybody to do something they're not currently doing, it takes some kind of motivation, right? Why do you have so many motivational speakers in the network marketing field? And then people will say, well, motivational speakers, it wears off the next day. And I think it was Jim Rohn who said, so is my shower, but I keep taking one. So motivation is key. So how do we motivate people to get into home-based business? Well, the great common denominator, the great motivator for a lot of people is money, right? It may not rank up there as number one for you, but it ranks up there for most people, kind of up there with oxygen. So they said, if we'll pay people to run a home-based business. Now, what's the easiest way for Congress to put money in your pocket? Take money, less money out of your pocket. It's not sending out some stupid $300 or $600 economic stimulus checks. Just reduce my freaking taxes by $600. And there's nobody in the middle, there's no administrative costs, and it doesn't get all screwed up like every other bureaucratic decision. Anyway, that's a different story. So they said, we will pay taxpayers to start and run a home-based business. We'll incentivize them to start a business, and we'll keep providing rewards as long as they continue running their business, meeting these two requirements. And the amount they decided to pay is the amount we look at back here, between $3,000 and $6,000 a year for most people. Now, for most people, what's that mean? It means somebody with a full-time W-2 job who's earning between, say, $35,000 and $50,000. That kind of person will probably save about $5,000 in taxes with a home-based business. I've been doing this coaching and training and teaching for almost 10 years, and I don't personally know of anybody who's reported back to me that they've saved less than $3,000. As long as you got a W-2 job and you're working your business on a regular basis with an attempt to make a profit. So that's why Congress did it. What did they do? What they did was they passed a series of tax deduction bills for small home-based businesses over a period of several years and sprinkled them into several tax bills. See, there was no one tax bill called the Home Business Stimulation Tax Bill. You know, if there had been, I wouldn't have to be here because you all know about it because the media would cover it. It would become big news. People write books about it. They teach it in school, et cetera. But that didn't happen. They sprinkled it in several tax bills over a period of years. And so that's why these are, by and large, not very well known. Now, the part of my background is that I did not intend to write a book about taxes. I didn't intend to write a book at all. I didn't even care about understanding taxes. I simply went to the bookstore one day to find the information for myself. One day, commuting back home in Washington, D.C., I said to myself, self, this is crazy. Commuting 3-4 hours a day, every day. So I stopped at a bookstore. I actually stopped at two bookstores on my way home that night and asked the information desk to help me find the answers to two questions. I said it might be one book, it might be two, I'm not sure. But I want to know what kind of tax breaks I'll get if I start a part-time home-based business. The second question is, how do I quantify the value of those tax breaks? What I was trying to do in my head as I'm driving home is try to figure out how much I'd have to make on my own to be equivalent to my corporate salary. Well, the librarians couldn't, or the information desk couldn't find anything on that subject, either in their own bookstore or in their database. So that's strange, because I'd been hearing about the value of home business tax breaks since I was a kid caddying on a golf course in Iowa. I've had successful people telling me that's the way to start accumulating wealth and becoming successful is business ownership. So I came home, I went to Amazon.com, couldn't find anything. Because I lived in Washington, D.C., I had access to the Library of Congress, which a lot of people don't know that's available to the public. It's one of the few government buildings that is open to the public. But it is. What's significant about the Library of Congress is it's the only place in America that has a copy of every book ever copyrighted in America. If it's ever been written in copyright, a copy exists there. So if it ain't there, it doesn't exist. At the Library of Congress, it works a little differently. You don't walk up to the information desk and ask your question. You submit a question, you go home. They called me back 3 days later and said, we can't find anything on this subject. They couldn't find anything on the subject of tax deductions available for home business owners. When Congress did backflips to try to pass, I later found out, they did backflips to try to pass tax breaks for our benefit, but nobody knew about it, nobody had written about it. Part of my background is I've been an investigative reporter, so I just got, my curiosity got piqued. Measures of my curiosity or another part of my anatomy that got agitated. But I said, I'm going to figure this out. So I started, well, investigative reporter is very much like a network marketer, except we call them sources, you call them referrals. You know, it's the same thing, though. We're looking for somebody who knows something about the subject, and then who else do they know, and who do they know? And eventually you start to piece things together. Well, I spent about a year tracking down and finding the tax breaks that were hidden in the bowels of the 18,000-page and growing tax code. That turned out to be the easiest part. The hard part was the next 6 months when I spent the time it took me to translate all that into English. Because it is the convoluted tax code isn't going to help anybody. So when I finally decided that I needed to put this book out, Home Business Tax Savings Made Easy, it's because I started telling some people what I was discovering, what I found out when I was doing the research. I found out there were huge tax breaks, that they weren't some loophole that some clever lawyer found to make a tax deduction apply to home-based businesses. These were tax breaks passed by Congress for the purpose of helping home-based businesses. I told them how big they were, and they said, you know, there are millions of people who need that information. And that was the first time I ever gave me a thought to writing a book. So I didn't really do the research for me. For you, I did it for me. And I just put what I learned in a book. And then eventually when the IRS reviewed it, this is a little aside, but you'll love this one. Give me an idea of how much time, how long we break before breakfast? Okay. No, about when? Okay, you said about 7:30? That wasn't what you said? Okay. There I go again. My daughter tells me I've got Alzheimer's disease. Because sometimes you remember, sometimes you don't, Dad. Okay, what was I talking about? I wasn't listening again. Help me. You're listening either, huh? Yeah. Thank you. You're going to love this little story. Here's how the IRS solicits a copy of a manuscript to be reviewed. I got this letter, which I later found out it's a form letter. But the letter said, dear Mr. Mueller, we are investigating your involvement in tax avoidance schemes. That was the opening line of the letter. That got my attention. It very quickly then got attention of my lawyer later. And you know when they finished reviewing the book? By the way, this is a book that you can read in a couple of nights easily. The IRS got back to me about 6 months later. I guess they got slow readers in the IRS. But eventually got back to me. But you know they couldn't bring themselves to say there's nothing wrong in this book. You know what they said? We are no longer actively investigating your avoidance and tax avoidance, your involvement in tax avoidance schemes. Gotta love it. Now you see why they came out number one in my poll. Biggest jerks in America. So back to the that's why I wrote the book, because it's scattered throughout lots of pieces of tax code. And by the way, this is fifth edition now. The first edition, frankly, lasted about 3 months, and then I had to put out first edition revised, because the first edition didn't have all the tax code references in it. So if people would buy the book, they'd read it, they'd go to their tax pro, and their tax pro, who had never heard of some of these deductions, would say, you can't do that. I don't think that's legal. I'm sure that'll raise a red flag. I love anybody ever been told by a tax pro that'll raise a red flag? I love it. Red flag, in my professional opinion, is a term invented by tax pros to use to answer tax clients that ask questions they don't know the answers to. I swear, I really believe that. So if they had never heard of it before, they'll say that'll raise a red flag. Or that'll increase your chance of an audit. That's the other half of the... Usually they come together. Sometimes they're used separately. I put out the first edition revised, which now every time I describe a tax deduction available to home business owners, I cite the specific article and section number of the tax code that authorized it, or the congressional law that approved it, or the tax court ruling that clarified it. So now the references are in there. Now, if you go to those references, it's a language that most of you don't speak. But it's a language your accountant speaks. So if they look it up, they can only come back with one answer. And that's, oh, you're right, I didn't know that. So that's what Congress did. They scattered tax breaks throughout several bills. But then it got better. Remember their purpose of passing all these deductions? To get people like us into home-based businesses, right? Incentivize us to get in, reward us for staying active in it, right? So when this legislation got passed and they sent it over to the IRS to be put in the tax code, they said, don't make taxpayers wait until April 15th to get their new additional refunds. Let them collect it all year. Why? Because once again, I can't believe this, but in one presentation I'm using wise in Congress in the same sentence twice. Congress wisely decided that how are they going to convince you to get into a home-based business in January if you're not going to get your money back until next April? Half the people in America are broke, and the other half are afraid to spend the money they've got. So how's that going to work? So Congress said, we've got to give you the money on an ongoing basis because you have expenses on an ongoing basis. So that's what they told the IRS to do. And what the short version of what happens is you're able then now to have less money withheld from your paycheck for taxes because you qualify for these tax breaks. How much? Well, running a home-based business will save the average person around $5,000 a year. Might be $3,000, $4,000, might be $8,000, $9,000. My personal sponsor in Prepaid Legal is his first year saved over $8,000 on his taxes just using this information. That works out to be about $400 a month, which is $100 a week. If you're thinking about getting into this business, or if you're talking to someone about getting into this business, think about this. What's the IRS? How much work does the IRS require you to do to qualify these tax breaks? Work about 3 to 4 hours a week, right? Let's take the high end. Let's say 4 hours a week. In exchange for that, they're going to put an extra $100 cash in your pocket. Isn't that like Uncle Sam paying you $25 an hour to run your own business, and then you get to keep the profits when you're successful? If you walked up to one of your prospects and try this, walk up to one of your prospects and say, I'm looking for somebody to do some part-time work for me. Need somebody around 4 hours a week on average. It's not really heavy lifting. It's mostly telephone work and going to meetings and sharing with people and stuff like that. You can pretty much do it whenever it's convenient for you. But I need somebody about 4 hours a week, and I'm paying $25 an hour. Do you know anybody that might be interested? Almost all of them are going to say, yeah, me. You say, great, sign here. You're a Prepaid Legal associate. Isn't that how it works? Look at it, $100 a week. What would it be like if you got to, what's your favorite morning of the week? Probably Monday, right? How about on your favorite day of the week, when the alarm goes off, you reach over to hit the snooze alarm, and you see a crisp $100 bill on your nightstand with a post-it note on there with a handwritten note saying, you can do anything you want to with this $100 this week. P.S., there'll be another one here next week and every week for the rest of your working life as long as you keep working your Prepaid Legal business at least 4 or 5 hours a week with a profit intent. What would it be like to put an extra $100 a week cash every Monday in your pocket or in your purse that you can do anything you want to with it? That's what it's like. It really is cash. It's really immediate. It's not something you get the... You can wait and get an additional $5,000 in April if you want to, but you don't have to. You have the option to put it in your pocket now. So Congress said by running up a home-based business, you can now begin having about $400 less money withheld from your paycheck for taxes each month, right? So the question is this. If they're going to take $400 less out of your wages for taxes, where's that $400 going to go? Into your take-home pay. And that's how you give yourself a pay raise. So you can now begin putting an extra about $400 a month. Now, this is just an example. It's pretty much an average, but it may be $250, $300. It might be $800. It is whatever it is. But if you have less money being withheld for taxes, your paycheck is going to automatically go up. This is your money, and you've been letting Uncle Sam have it. Not anymore, though. How about if we finally start to slow down the bleeding? Here's the question. Would an extra $400 a month cash be enough money to run your Prepaid Legal business? I think there are only two possible answers, yes or yes. I don't know anybody, including the people that go crazy with this business, who are spending more than $400 a month. This literally means Uncle Sam will pay for the cost of running your home-based business. He's paying all the operation costs. Now, it's not really Uncle Sam's money. It's your money, but it's your money you can't keep in your pocket any other way. So it's like Uncle Sam paying for it. It is now possible for somebody who is broke to get into Prepaid Legal. Why are you letting Uncle Sam take the money from you if they did backflips over about a three-year period, putting tons of tax deductions in place to make it possible for you to be into a business like this and create a new lifestyle for yourself? I think it's time we slow down the bleeding. Uncle Sam will actually pay you. This has got to get the attention of some prospects. Uncle Sam will pay you about $300 to $600 a month to run your own part-time business. And you don't have to submit any paperwork to get somebody to approve the deal. It's automatic. It's already part of the law. So here's a question. If your prospect knew just what you've learned, we haven't even gone into the specific tax breaks yet, but if your prospect knew what you just learned, would this information make it easier for them to decide that they want to join you on your team?
Oh, yeah.
So then the question is, do you feel you're ready to share this information with other people? Probably not, actually. You blew my you just be quiet. Some people that are quick on the uptake will be able to say, yeah, I'll do it right now. And that's why they're in this front row, by the way, because they don't wait until they know everything before they start talking, you know. I once had somebody in prepaid legal tell me that the day they signed up, they became ignorant on steroids. I'm just going to tell people that they get a lawyer to help with anything they want, and we'll sort the details out later when I introduce them to my prospect. So can you duplicate what I've just done? Probably not. I mean, I spent more years than you'd like to believe studying this stuff. I mean, it's probably no surprise that I'm single. Who'd want to be married to a guy that takes tax code to bed to read at night? Everything in the successful in this business has to be duplicatable, right? Can you memorize these words? Here, read this. You tell a prospect that this isn't even in the book. You don't need this. You don't need a book for this. You tell a prospect that they can Uncle Sam will pay for their business. They'll if they have a full-time W-2 job, they can put an extra $300 to $600 a month cash in their pocket, enough to pay for the business. They'll say, "Well, how do you do that?" And you say, "This brochure, Uncle Sam will pay you to run a home-based business." Essentially describes what I've just gone through. It's a little two-panel brochure. Tells people what the easy qualifications are, the two-step qualifications. It actually gives us some examples of the specific tax breaks, which we're going to go to in a second. And then it explains how that puts cash in your pocket. Once you qualify for the tax breaks, you can have less money withheld from your paycheck for taxes. And the back panel has lots of white space for a specific reason. That's where you're... The little type just says, "For information on home business with a low startup cost that will qualify you for your large tax savings, contact the person who shared this brochure with you." That's exactly where I decided to put an Avery label over with your own contact information, or put a bigger label in there with your own contact information. This is a powerful recruiting tool. I sell these things at cost. Because it's a way of getting the information out to everybody. It ends up being a recruiting tool because some people read the fine print back here and find out, okay, to get more brochures, I go to taxsavingsbrochure.com, which leads them to a page on my website. So it does something like that. But what it does mostly is it's a great way to let people know about another benefit of being in this business. Okay. By now, you're saying, all right, when's he going to finally tell us what these tax breaks are? He told me 20, 30 minutes ago that nobody ever told you that, but I'm going to tell you today, and I'm still waiting. All right, let's. Congress ultimately passed over 100 tax breaks for home-based business owners. That's the bad news. The good news, you don't need to know most of them because they're little ones. My evaluation is that you only need to understand 7. If you understand 7 of the tax breaks that that Uncle Sam has passed for us, you will be able to put the kind of cash in your pocket I just talked about. If you learn the other 107, you might be able to put an extra $20 a week in your pocket, $20 a month in your pocket. The rest of them, I think, aren't worth it. They just kind of there's more to learn, but you don't want to become a tax geek. You want to run your prepaid legal business, right? You want to learn enough about taxes to use it. Okay, what are those 7? These are the top 7. We're going to go through them one at a time. First one, business use of your home. These are in no particular order, by the way. The top 7 are the top 7, but I don't list them from biggest to littlest or alphabetical or anything smart like that. I'm just going to randomly throw them in there. Business use of your home. This is one that is often referred to as the home office deduction, but that's way too narrow a definition for it. The form you fill out in your tax return is called expenses for business use of your home. That's the label. That's the name of the form. This is a tax deduction that some of you may have had tax pros in the past tell you it's not worth taking this deduction. You didn't make enough money, or it'll raise a red flag, or it may increase the chance of an audit. A lot of those things used to be true because it was very difficult to qualify for home office deduction. Not anymore. Now, to qualify for a home office, you have to simply be able to say that the primary administration or management of my business takes place in my home. Is that where you come up with your prospect list? Is that where you return emails to your prospects? Is that where you return phone calls? Is that where you sit on conference calls? That's administrative and management functions. If you do that, you qualify for a home office. It used to be you had to show the primary value of your business took place in the home. What's the primary value of free period legal? It's recruiting customers and prospects, right? You'd have to do that in your home to qualify, and in your home office, no less. So when Congress found out the IRS was interpreting it that way, they changed the law. They said, okay, we'll fix it. We'll clarify it for you. Now that's what it says. The second thing that changed just a few months ago is the tax code. You used to have to have a separate room for home office. The tax code wording was it had to be an area that had at least three walls around it. Isn't that creative? I guess that's the best the IRS could come up with for creativity. But I think that kind of means a separate room. They used to nab a lot of people every year in audits because they'd set up their home office in the only place they had available, the spare bedroom. In the area they used, they put a desk in there in an area that was available, and they only used that for business, et cetera. But the clever auditor would say, boy, you're a lucky person. You must not have overnight guests very often, huh? He'd say, no, maybe once, twice a week at the most. You lose the deduction for two reasons. One is you didn't use the entire room for your home office. And second is it's got to be an area used regularly and exclusively for business purposes. Regularly means you're in and out of there frequently. So what they don't want you to do is if you're an empty nester, they don't want you to go take your biggest room, stick a desk in there, never use it, call that your home office. So they don't want you to use it on a regular basis. Regular and exclusive. Now, the IRS has no sense of humor when it comes to exclusive. Exclusive is like pregnant. You is or you ain't. You know? You either use this area only for business or you use it mostly for business. Mostly doesn't qualify. So only. But here's the good news. A few months ago, they changed the regulation. The rule now says a home office, instead of three walls, it says a home office has to be a visually identifiable space. Now, that's almost as convoluted as three walls around it. But here's what that means. If this is a one-room efficiency apartment, and we put a table over in this corner, and put a computer and a printer and a telephone on that table, put a chair up against it, isn't that a visually identifiable space? Doesn't that look like an office? If I took a snapshot of this room, wouldn't you say, and I said, where's my home office? You'd say, right there, right? Bingo, that's the visually identifiable space. So you can literally have a home office in as much or little space as you have available. Anybody can have room for a home office. The second change that occurred recently was, first an extension of that one. Now that it's a visually identifiable space, we can do something we could never do before. If you've got a closet where you have your out-of-season clothes hanging on one side, say half of your closet. The other side has your prepaid legal promotional materials and your marketing materials and et cetera. That's not an exclusive use room, right? Doesn't have to be anymore. Take a picture and it looks like, oh yeah, clothes here, prepaid legal stuff there. That space would qualify. It's a visually identifiable space. You can add that square footage to the square footage of your home office. We're looking for a large square footage because that's what's going to let us write off a bunch of our rent and utilities and repairs, et cetera. What if you took, there is no law that says you've got to put all your business supplies in your home office. What if you have two bookcases in your living room and you empty one of them out of all, no cookbooks or quilting books in there. You empty it out and you put all your business books in there. It gets even better. The law says that's a visually identifiable space. So footprint of the bookcase is only going to be maybe 2.5-3 square feet, right? But the code says that you can include that square footage plus a reasonable amount of walking space around it. If you're farsighted, this is a good time to take your contact out. The further you got to back off from that, so you can spread your stuff around your home and come up with collectively each one has to be. I really recommend you take a snapshot, a picture of each of these areas, because it says visually identifiable, so give them a visual. In the unlikely event you're audited, you've got the proof there that you had visually identifiable space. Add all that stuff up. So let's say you've got a 1,000-square-foot home, and when you add all that up, you've got 200 square feet that's being used regularly and exclusively for business. You got 20% business use percentage, right? If you're a renter, 20% of your rent just became a tax-deductible business expense. This is the only area in 18,000 pages of tax code where a renter gets a tax break. But if 18% of your home is used for your business, regularly, exclusively, or 20%, then 20% of your rent is deductible. 20% of all utilities just became deductible. Gas, electric, water, sewer, trash collection, recycling, all those kinds of things. 20% of your insurance, renter's insurance or homeowner's insurance. 20% of overall repair, general maintenance. All those things became tax deductible. It's under what they call the, it's what, a category they call the indirect expense. These are indirect expenses because they're indirectly related to your business. So you pay the same amount of money to heat that, heat your home without one of, without one area being called an office as you would if you had an office. So it's indirectly related to your business. This is a huge deduction because it allows you to convert, usually at least $3,000 or $4,000 worth of personal expenses into tax deductible business expenses. Now, to pay $1,000 worth of rent or whatever, you'd have to earn about $1,700 from your W-2 job to bring home $1,000 in take-home pay to pay that bill. As a business owner, if a business owner gets a $1,000 utility bill or rent bill, they only have to earn $1,000 to pay that bill. So there are two tax systems in America. There's a tax system for employees and a tax system for business owners. And you can be in both categories. The one for employees is step one, you work hard to earn a decent wage. Step two, you don't even see. Uncle Sam sucks a big chunk out of that while you're not looking. Step three, you get to live on the leftovers called your take-home pay. A business gets to have a very different three-step tax system. A business works hard to bring revenue into the business. But step two is they spend as much of that revenue as they have to paying their business bills. And then step three is they pay taxes on what's left. Think about this. What if you got to take home all of your wages from your W-2 job? There's no withholding. You could borrow home all your wages. You sat down at the kitchen table and you paid all your bills except taxes. You paid all your regular bills. After you paid all your bills, you say, okay, Myrtle, how much you got left? All right, we got to pay a percentage of that for taxes. That's how businesses work. That's why you get such huge tax breaks as a business. You bring in revenue, pay your business expenses, then pay taxes on what's left. So this is a huge deduction. Another one related to this, is which applies to a lot of people in this room, is deducting furniture and furnishings in areas of the home that are not used exclusively for business. Maybe your living room. Let's say you bring somebody in once a week and use your living room for PBR. And you, let's say you use your living room five times a week and once it's for PBR, four times it's for your family. You had 20% use of that room, right? You cannot include that in your square footage because it's not exclusive. But what you can do is you can write off 20%. You can depreciate 20% of all the furniture and furnishings in that room because that room is being used 20% for business. Most people have never heard of this one before, so they just totally missed this deduction. Hiring your kids is probably my favorite of all the tax deductions. You may be saying, who would want to hire your kids? I wonder who would want a McDonald's franchise after managing a group of teenagers. You say, why do I want to hire my kids? Well, here's why you might want to hire your kids. If you've got a, let's say you've got a young child you're paying $10 a week allowance to. How much do you have to earn your W-2 job to pay them $10? About $17 in wages to bring home $10 to pay them their bill, paying their allowance. Let's say that child did $10 worth of work for your home-based business as a part-time employee. Now how much do you have to make in order to pay them a $10 allowance? $10. You save yourself $7. So all the money you pay them then isn't allowance, it's tax-deductible wages. Wages and benefits are tax-deductible. So you don't pay any taxes on that money you pay them because they've earned it. Now the best part is they don't pay taxes on it either. A minor can earn up to $5,700 a year tax-free. Did you know that? A minor means up to 18 automatically as long as they're on your tax return as a dependent. It can go up to 23 if they're enrolled full-time in school. Full-time means at least 5 months of the year. Or it can be indefinite. It can be lifetime if you have a disadvantaged child that's not able to live on their own. This is a huge deduction because you imagine if you hire, oh, how old the kid need to be? How old does a child need to be work at McDonald's? 16. And for some other kind of jobs, it's 18. It's because the labor department administers those laws, child labor laws, because it's for the protection of the children. Safety is what the primary concern is. The courts have ruled that safety is not a concern for children working for their own parents in a home, inside the home. Not that they don't care if the kids are safe. It's because they assume it's a safe environment. I know some of your homes are not that safe. But anyway, the courts think so. So they said that there is no age minimum. How young can a child be to work in your home-based business? Here's another one where we're helped out by the tax courts. A woman, another woman, had three kids she'd hired. went to the tax court because the auditor said, you can't hire kids that young to work in your business. The youngest child was 7. She won the case. The judge said, in his precedent-setting ruling, he said, any child, this is a quote, any child over the age of 6 can surely perform viable work in a parent's home-based business. 6. I used to say that means 7 or older, but somebody in one of these groups said, what if my child turned 6 yesterday, and now they're 6 years and a day, so that's older than 6, right? I guess it is. I guess it is. So if they had at least their 6th birthday. Now, that doesn't mean they can't be 5 years old or 4 years old and work in your home-based business either, but it just, she didn't have any kids that young. This is not based on IRS clarifying. Remember, what, they don't ever do what? Clarify anything. Tax courts do. The tax courts, they don't set rules. They simply rule on cases. This particular case was a child that was 7 years old. Imagine if you start if you hired your children when they're as young as 7, and that money was saved until they're 17, 18, 19, they could be going to college with tax-free money. That's going to roughly reduce the cost of tuition by about a third or more. Now, here's what's cool about hiring your kids. There are certain steps you got to go through. Don't take what I'm saying here and go off and do these things, because I'm giving you enough to be dangerous, but not enough to be useful. So don't run off and hire your kids yet. There are certain steps you have to go through. One of those steps is you got to pay them on a regular basis. You have a little employment agreement to specify when payday is and how much they get paid, et cetera. But because you're a business, you need to act like a business. So you're going to pay them with a business check, right? What can a minor do with a check? Nothing. So you waltz in the bank with your children and you open a custodial account. You're the custodian. On Saturday morning, you pay your child the $30 they earned this week. You go into the bank together. You help them deposit the money, which means you deposit and make them think they did. And then maybe you take 10 out and give it to them for allowance. The other 20 stays in there. Who can control that account? Only you, until they turn 18 years old. Or until they turn the age of majority, which in all states I think is at least 18, and some states it's higher than that. You still control the money. So you can make sure that money stays in an interest-bearing something or other until they turn 18 and pay college tuition with it. What can you use that money for other than saving it for college? Not everybody's going to go to college. College isn't right for a lot of people. What else can be used for? The courts have ruled again. The court said, I bet you never thought of courts being our friend until now, right? Because that's the people that our provider law firms are fighting with. So the courts again ruled, and they said that if you hire your children, and well, regardless of where the child makes the money, it doesn't have to be a home-based business. A child can earn from some legal source, they can earn up to $5,700 a year. And put in this custodial account. When the tax courts ruled on what can be done with the custodial account money, they said anything that benefits the child except for room and board. You could use that money to help pay for their private school tuition. They could be helping earn that. They could be helping earn the cost of their sports equipment for after-school sports, music lessons and musical instrument purchase and rent, educational summer camps and trips. Socks and underwear, backpacks and supplies, and anything that benefits the child, that money can be used for. And you're controlling the money. I had a deal with my daughter when she was younger. She's now 23, but when she was younger, I had a deal with her that I said, I was a single father, single parent. She lived with me, and I said, I will pay for your necessities, you pay for the niceties. I said, here's the difference. A necessity is you need a new pair of shoes to go to school. So we go to the mall, we find a good pair of shoes, good quality pair of shoes, cost $100. Okay? I'll buy that. I'm your father. I'm responsible for that. But she sees the pair next to it for $170. It has this cool little Nike logo on it. That's a nicety. So I'll pay the first $100. You pay the other $70 out of your account. When kids are young, they say, cool, I want the shoes. When they get older, they start learning a concept called delayed gratification. And we never have to teach it to them. Schools don't teach it to them. They start saying, that's my money. I could spend $70 now, but there might be something I want that $70 for more later. They learn a concept foreign to a whole generation of adults, and that's saving. They learn the concept of compound interest. Dad, how come I got more money in my account than I put in there? All these things schools don't teach them about life lessons. This is a wonderful tax deduction. Each child can earn up to $5,700 a year tax-free, as long as you follow, and the guidelines are very specific as what the speed limit is. You have to have an employment agreement. I give you one free on my website. You fill in the employment agreement. You got to decide payday. Pay him every payday. Have a business checking account, which does not need to be a business account by the bank terminology. It has to be a separate account you use only for business. It could be a personal account, but just don't commingle the funds. Out-of-pocket medical expenses. I talked a little bit about this before, about how big this deduction is. This is getting huge. Any taxpayer can get a tax deduction for out-of-pocket. Out-of-pocket, by the way, means that it's health-related expenses that you've incurred that your insurance company is not going to pay you back for. So it's out of your pocket, and it stays out of your pocket. I mean, it's your expense, which primarily means with after-tax dollars. Any taxpayer can get a deduction for their portion of out-of-pocket expenses for health insurance, except for two little things, if they don't have a home-based business. First, they've got to file Schedule A. You've got to itemize your tax deductions, because that's where you get the deductions. It's a Schedule A deduction. If you file a short form or you decide to take the standard deduction instead of itemizing, you lose. Even if you do file a Schedule A, even if you do itemize your tax deductions, you still lose the first 7.5%, equivalent of 7.5% of your taxable income. And what's that mean in English? It means that if you make $40,000 a year in wages, 7.5% of $40,000 is $3,000. You lose the first $3,000 worth of out-of-pocket health expenses anyway, even if you do file Schedule A, unless you own a home-based business. Section 105 of the tax code spells out the specifics for how you can deduct 100% of all out-of-pocket health care costs. There is no threshold of 7.5% or anything. You don't need to file Schedule A because it's a Schedule C deduction. It's your business tax deduction. And it applies to you and all members of your immediate family. Here's how it works. You hire your spouse to work part-time in your home-based business. Then you give so the wages you give your spouse are going to be tax-deductible, right? Now, in this case, the income is not tax-free, so you want to pay your spouse minimum wage. That's probably all they're worth anyway. But why do you think I'm not married? Okay, so you won't pay a minimum wage because you're going to pay Social Security and Medicare on those wages. So, but the purpose, the reason for hiring your spouse is so that you can give your spouse is now an employee. Who can give an employee benefits? The employer. You're the employer, your spouse an employee. You can now give your spouse an employee benefit. The employee benefit you give your spouse is a written document, which I'll give to you, that it's a legal document, which says, I officially set up this as an employee benefit for all employees in my company, which is one, right, so far. The benefit says, as long as you're working for my company, we will reimburse you for all out-of-pocket health care costs you have, for you and all members of your immediate family. Who else is in your spouse's immediate family? Voila, you and the kids. So you're able to write off every penny of what? The IRS definition of out-of-pocket health care costs. I gave it to you earlier. I'll give it to you again. It's any money spent on goods or services. Now, if you ask the IRS for a definition, an example, they'd say goods are like prescription drugs. Services are like doctor's visit, because they want to make you think that's all it is. Any money spent on goods or services for the purpose of treating or preventing a condition or illness. Now, I ask you, aren't Band-Aids deductible? Isn't that good you're purchasing for the purpose of treating a condition called a cut? Aspirin, you get a choice. Is good you're purchasing for the purpose of treating a condition called a headache or a hangover, or for the purpose of preventing something called a heart attack? A lot of the money you spend in the grocery store, isn't toothpaste dental preventative care? Isn't it for the purpose of saving money when you go to the dentist? Of course. So a lot of the money you spend in the pharmacy department, I'll take questions in a minute, but if you interrupt me, I got my speech memorized. If you interrupt me, I got to start over. let's see, how far back should I turn the clock? we'll be with you in just a second. So all anything that falls into that category. So it's a very large category. It also can sometimes cover nutraceuticals, natural homeopathic remedies, acupuncture, you name it. It doesn't need to be authorized by the FDA. It's why are you purchasing it? What's your purpose in purchasing it? If I purchased vitamin C because I think it makes me healthier, not deductible, because I'm not purchasing it for the purpose of treating or preventing a condition or illness. But if I'm taking, because, in fact, the IRS clarifies that. They clarify anything that's in their favor. They said that, any money spent on anything which makes you generally healthy, healthy in general, doesn't qualify. Okay, so if I take vitamin C because I want to prevent the cold, a cold in the spring, now I'm taking it to prevent a condition called a cold. So this is a huge category. Every single penny for you and all members of your immediate family is deductible with a home-based business when you hire your spouse on a part-time basis to work for you and give her, him or her this benefit. I'm going to go through 5, 6, and 7 real quickly because I want to save time for questions. Oh, great question. What if you're single? I take this benefit. How did I do it? I incorporated my business. The corporation becomes a separate legal entity. It hired me as an employee. And you know what? I have such a generous employer that they gave me that that benefit on day one. I hold my board meetings in the shower. You can incorporate a one-person corporation. Now, it's got to be a C corporation. An S corporation doesn't qualify for this one. Pass-throughs don't qualify. C corps and partnerships don't qualify. But S corps and partnerships. C corps and sole proprietorships, LLCs, they all can qualify. Okay, let's go on to use of your personal vehicles. This category is huge, and it's the easiest one to get lots of money, lots of deductions on. Your personal vehicles. This what I'm about to tell you qualify for if you operate 4 or fewer vehicles for business purposes. Now, that's going to be like everybody in the room, I think, right? They want to exclude fleet owners, like, you know, taxi companies and stuff like that. So if you own 4 or fewer vehicles that you use for business purposes, I don't care if you own 17 vehicles, if you only use... Now, most of us use 1 or 2 vehicles for business, right? The business use deduction is... this year, the rate changes every year. There are 2 ways you can compute this. You can determine what your business use percentage of your vehicle is and take that percentage of your actual out-of-pocket costs, and then you've got to keep track of that all year. Or you can take what they call the standard rate method. The IRS gives you a rate every year, which they claim is scientifically determined, that includes all the costs of operating your car, from everything from license and registration to depreciation to vehicle purchase costs to gasoline and front-end alignments, et cetera. That number for this year is 50 cents a mile. 55.0. That's down from 55 cents last year and 50.5 cents the year before. The IRS decided that it's they must have a better gas station than I do because they say it's less expensive, I guess, to operate a vehicle now. Now, 50 cents a mile doesn't sound like much. 2 quarters rubbing together, that's not much money. If you put, say, 8,000 business miles on your car in a year, that's a $4,000 cash deduction. Even... you have 5,000 business miles, 2,500. It's most people. The AAA said the average person this year will put 12,000 business miles on 12,000 miles on their car. If 80% of your miles are business miles, that's 10,000 miles. That's a $5,000 tax deduction. Now here's where it gets really good. I know a lot of people who have never claimed this deduction because they say their record keeping is just way too hard. Let me tell you what the record keeping requirements are. This is new. Not really new, but it used to be, what I'm about to tell you, used to be a Treasury Department regulation. And Treasury is the parent company of the IRS. So the IRS is required to abide by all Treasury Department regulations as well. So this is a Treasury reg. Now it's in the IRS code. It's called the 90-day rule. The IRS now says, this is for people whose jobs are not seasonal. If you use your car approximately the same number of miles every month throughout the year, then you qualify. That'd be just about everybody in the room. They said if you're in that category, then if you keep records for 90 consecutive days, that's what I need to do for the year. 90 days is 1/4 of the year. If you keep records, I'll describe the exact records in a minute, just see how easy they are too. Keep records for just 90 days. The whole rest of the year, the other 3/4 of the year, you keep no records at all. They'll let you take those 90-day figures and use that as a sampling period and apply that over the entire year. You have no record-keeping requirements the other 9 months of the year. How easy is that? What do you have to do for 90 days? You've got to fill out a vehicle mileage log. Now, that sounds complicated, right? A vehicle mileage log has 4 columns in it. You've got a piece of lined paper, draw 3 vertical lines down to make 4 columns, and you got a vehicle mileage log now. Label the first column today's date. That's the one I have the most trouble with. That's the hardest one. Seriously, when you work 8 days a week, you don't know what day it is. So the first column is today's date. The second column is destination. The third column is primary purpose. And the fourth column is miles traveled. What day is it? Where am I going? Why am I going there? And how far am I driving? That's it. Every time, now, this is, pay attention to this. Every time you start your ignition for 90 days, you have to fill that line out. Not just business use. You can write down only business use if you want to keep the records for the entire year. So you have to also write down when you're going to church and when you're going to Hooters. But you don't have to tell them where you went. You have to tell them you went there. It's simply so they can check your math. That's the only reason for doing it. But on the first page of my vehicle mileage log, I put a key there. P equals personal. And I pee all over my tax records. Every time I've got a, if I'm going to church or whether I'm going to Hooters, my destination is P, primary purpose is P. It's none of their business why I went there, but it is their business I use the vehicle for a non-business purpose. You understand? So you don't have to reveal anything you don't want to them. Now, for the business use, column number two, destination, doesn't need to be specific. Only specific enough to be able to convince an auditor that, yeah, that's probably a business use. Let's say you come to, you have a business meeting every, you have a presentation every Thursday night at the Eastside Holiday Inn. Okay, so on reference number one, you could say Eastside Holiday Inn. You don't need any address or anything. You can even abbreviate that on subsequent use if you want to. Now, if you go there once a week, every week, then all you've got to write down is today's date, Holiday Inn, BizOp presentation, miles traveled. You're done. You don't need to say what room you're in, who the speaker was. You don't even need to name the business. Just BizOp presentation. Now, the real opportunity in this is in the third column, primary purpose. Do you want me to speed up? Are you getting bored? Okay. The real opportunity is in primary purpose. This is the IRS wording, not Ron Mueller's wording. Primary purpose implies to me they recognize there must be secondary purposes sometimes. Right? What do you do in those cases? If you're going to go to a shopping center to buy a birthday present for Aunt Susie, that would be a personal use of your vehicle, right? Non-deductible. That'd be one of those P's. So you go to the shop, so that's, that round trip is non-deductible. If you're going to that same shopping center to have flyers made at Kinko's for your next presentation, your next meeting, that's a tax-deductible business use, right? So those two trips combined gives you a 50% business use percentage. What if you did both of them on the same trip? What if you went to the shopping center, parked your car, went inside, went to Kinko's, bought the birthday present, went back, picked up your job at Kinko's, went back in your car, drove back home? Is that business use or personal use? Everybody wants to jump in and say business use, but the law always says based on what. So the answer based on what is based on the tax courts that rule that in a situation like that, the taxpayer determines which purpose was primary. And there is no column on your vehicle mileage log for secondary purpose. Aunt Susie's birthday present never shows up. For your mileage log purposes, you legitimately just say today's date, destination shopping center, primary purpose, print flyers for a business meeting, number of miles traveled, or miles you travel. Now, those two things got handled in one trip. It was tax deductible, so now instead of a 50% business use percentage, it's 100%. If, when you're about to run a personal errand, you pause for a second and say, is there any business errand that I could run at the same time, same place? See, I might have been about to go to the shopping center to buy this birthday present. And I asked myself that question and say, well, yeah, I got to make those flyers for next week's meeting. I was going to do that next week, but I guess I could do it today. Or when you're going to run a business errand, ask yourself, is there a personal errand I could run at the same time? As long as it's on the same trip. I used to, when my daughter was younger, I used to, and she was in high school, she used to get a ride to school. Because every day I had to do business banking. And I happened to have selected a bank that was in the same direction as her high school, only a little bit further away. So the fact I pulled over the curb and dropped her off didn't count as a stop. I'm going from home to my bank. She got a free ride. If you get creative, and it's, I mean, I'm not saying do anything that's illegal. That wasn't illegal. That wasn't the use of, I didn't start my ignition, right? Every time you start your ignition, there's a line in it. Do not strive for brevity, by the way. If you use your vehicle 8 times a day, you should have 8 lines. Bigger count. Bigger is better. 8 lines. And the If you don't use your car for a couple of days, you don't have any obligation to fill anything out, but I recommend to you that what you do is scrawl across that vehicle not used this date, just to make it clear to an auditor that that day counts as one of your 90 days, but you didn't use your vehicle during that day. Now, the last column, I'm going to detail this one because this deduction is worth $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for most people in this room. This one deduction alone with the minimal little record-keeping requirements. The fourth column, miles traveled. They give you a couple of ways you can do that. The one they prefer is starting and ending odometer reading. Starting and ending odometer. What was your odometer reading? What does it say? How many miles are on your car when you left? How many miles does it say on the dashboard when you arrive? That's your starting and ending odometer reading. Now, first of all, that's just plain stupid. Because if you're going to be filling this out every time you start your ignition, isn't your ending odometer reading from the trip you spent coming here going to be the same as your starting odometer reading when you go home? So just write down your starting odometer reading. If an auditor says, where's your ending odometer reading? You'll say, look down, line stupid. Unless somebody stole your car in the parking lot while you're in this meeting, your starting odometer reading to go back home is exactly the same as the ending odometer reading to come here. So that simplifies things a little bit. That's how they'd prefer you do it, with odometer reading. Because that way their auditors can look at the numbers and see, make sure you didn't skip periods and stuff like that. But the other one that they will accept, but they don't like particularly, is push that button on your dashboard that sets your trip recorder to zero. So you're about to drive home, you start your ignition, you fill out the other lines, push that button to zero, and you drive home. Now, the number that shows on your trip recorder is going to be the number of miles it took to drive home, right? Again, you can write that down if you want to, but again, you don't have to. You can wait until you fill out your vehicle mileage log next time you're starting your car, because when you reach out to push that button to set it to zero, read the numbers off first and write them down. In the beginning, you're going to have some kind of a memory mechanism. You throw your vehicle mileage log on the driver's seat of the car, so that you have to either sit on it or move it, which reminds you to fill it out. Or one of my favorites is put it up on the dashboard. First time you go around a corner, it's going to go sliding, and you're going to say, oh, crap, I forgot to fill my mileage log out. So do something to remind yourself for a while, and then it'll become a habit. You know how long it takes to fill out my mileage log? Less time, I think, than it takes to fasten my seatbelt. And I don't think about fastening my seatbelt. It's a habit. At the end of the 90 days, and you try to break yourself of this habit, it's kind of comical, really. I go to reach for my, I say, oh, I don't need to do that. Well, something's wrong. Did I wear my pants? You know, it feels like I'm missing something. Because it's become a habit after 90 days. So that's a huge deduction, very easy to qualify for. And by the way, if you get audited, now your chances, I talk about audits a lot, not because your chance of getting audited are great, it's like 2% or less, but if you get audited, I want to make sure that you're bulletproof, that you don't have to worry about the outcome. When most people go to their mailbox and they pull out a letter that says IRS in the corner, and they open it up and it says, congratulations, you've been selected for, don't you love being selected? I never got selected first when I was a kid. I was the last one chosen. But the IRS will choose me. Most people, when they open an envelope like that, they get the same feeling in their gut as they get when they look in a rearview mirror and see flashing blue lights. I can get you to where if you get a letter like that, you'll see that as an unavoidable annoyance. If you're driving home at 3 o'clock in the morning and you see a sobriety checkpoint and you've not been drinking, you know what the outcome is going to be, right? Are you worried? No. What are you? You're agitated. You can be agitated instead of worried when you go to an audit. More than half the people who I've been coaching over the last 10 years, when they get audited, they come back and file for a second refund. They don't pay money. But in the process of defending their deductions, they discover a few deductions they forgot to claim. So they file an amended return, get another refund. I'll teach them to fool you. Oh, so I was going to say, if you happen to get audited, and they'll look at your Schedule C, and if you claim the vehicle deduction, they'll hone in on that one immediately. That's the first one. Why? It's a big ticket item. And if they can disallow it, then you're going to owe a bunch of money to Uncle Sam. So why do they do it? Question number one is, may I see your vehicle mileage log? They know that statistically most taxpayers will say, what's that? In which case, they'll respond, deduction disallowed. There's a law that says without documentation, you get no deductions. Think of tax deduction as the opposite of the American legal system. You're not innocent until proven guilty. You get no deductions until you can prove you got them, if you qualified. So the proof is on the taxpayer. the proof of qualifying for vehicle use deductions is to have your vehicle mileage log. So when you say, here it is, story's over. You know, they're not gonna, what can they do? The numbers are what the numbers are. Okay, 6-1 is deducting business travel. It is becoming more and more common for people, business travelers, to bring their families with them. Business travel is, frankly, not much fun anymore. And I saw a great cartoon yesterday in this weekend section of the of USA Today. Two people are. The wife is reading the newspaper, and the headline is something about Obama does something about heightening our defense at the airports or something. And the husband's sitting there and says, "This might be a time to put ourselves on the do not fly list." That's the list of people that are known terrorists and wasn't funny to begin with. It's even less funny when you have to explain it. Okay, so anyway, the business travel is not fun. It's a hassle. So a lot of people are now, business people are now bringing their families with them, or they may go a day or two early, stay a day or two late to sightsee, visit friends, relatives, or what have you. So it's very common now to mix business with pleasure. That used to be a very difficult decision as to how do I document this in a way that I get the tax deduction for a business trip. It's now crystal clear. The IRS was forced into a corner by Congress last year to define this. We now know exactly what you have to do to qualify for the business deduction, even if you spend the vast majority of your time on personal matters. I'm not going to be able to go into detail about how much it is because we're kind of we're super breakfast time pretty soon. The last one's entertainment. Business entertainment used to be one. Again, it may increase your chance of an audit or may cause you problems in an audit because they were never specific enough about what constitutes entertainment. Or what kind of records you need. That's now history. Now they're very specific. Not only can you write off entertainment, but now there are two categories. There's regular entertainment and associated entertainment. So if, let's say David and I decide to go to play tennis tomorrow morning. Would tennis be a tax deductible entertainment expense? The answer is no, because you've got to have a bona fide business discussion during that event in order for that to be deductible. But if we had a business meeting or lunch later that day, that would be, let's say we had lunch, that would be deductible, right? Because we can have a bona fide business discussion over lunch. There's a category called associated entertainment. It's the entertainment associated with primary entertainment. It used to be that you could deduct that, the cost of that also, if it immediately preceded or followed the primary entertainment. So we have to play tennis right before or right after lunch. Now it's changed. Now it says, if the associated entertainment takes place at any time during the same calendar day, it can qualify. We could play tennis in the morning and have a meeting at night, and both of them qualify. Now, these are always 50%, not 100%. Okay, those are the top seven. Now, do you think that over a period of time, if you had a methodical way of learning them, you could learn those seven? There's only seven deductions to understand. You probably already qualify for them. You're probably already working your business at least 3 hours a week and with a profit intent. If not, all you have to do is make the decision to do it, and you can start today. And record keeping is required by law, but the law doesn't require it to be difficult. So I've got two different methods I can show you that where you can spend as little as 1 to 2 minutes a day keeping records, and you'll have bulletproof tax records. Why do people hate April 15th coming around? It's no longer because they might owe Uncle Sam money. Because more than 80% of all taxpayers last year got a refund. That is not, by the way, because the IRS got religion in April. It's because they found a way to get most people to methodically over-withhold their taxes. 15 months later, they gave you back the extra money you never had to give them in the beginning with no interest and no thank you note. And we think that's a good thing. It's a refund. No, we simply overpaid. But so people aren't afraid of paying taxes because most people don't have to pay taxes in April. They get a refund. But they hate April 15th because of all the time it takes to paw through the shoeboxes and go through your of records and go through your day planners and figure out what your deductions are. If you use either one of these two systems that I will teach you, you will spend almost no time on record keeping. The National Taxpayers Union last year did research that showed the average American small business owner, home-based business owner, spent 26 and a half hours getting their records ready to begin preparing their taxes. I used one of these two systems, and I got distracted, and it took me 20 minutes. It's really that easy. make it a habit. Like my habit is right before I close down my computer every night, I fill in my information. It takes me about 2 minutes. It's like when I wake up in the morning, I don't have to remember, oh yeah, I got to brush my teeth. You know, it's a habit. I don't have to remember when I get in my car, oh yeah, I got to fasten my seatbelt. It's a habit. Well, now I don't have to remember to keep records. It's a habit. When I'm ready to turn off my computer, there's something I haven't done. Oh yeah, fill in my log. So a minute a day and you can have all your records ready at the end of the year. It can totally take away all the hassle of record keeping. So the question now is, how can you learn and use these seven tax breaks? Well, there's a if we can get ready to hand out the invitations, I want to offer to show you how to make these work. So if Mariah and Caitlin, if we could get the invitations ready to hand out. There's an old Chinese saying that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Well, I just want to say I'm ready if you are. So let's hand out the invitations. I'm going to give you an incredible offer today because I have a 2-week course coming up, all done by telephone and email, that will be done in 2 weeks. You'll have everything I talked about flat out in 2 weeks. And as long as you get this information before the end of January, it can all be applied to last year's taxes as well, which you haven't filed yet. So how many people in this room was in a prepaid legal business last year? At any point last year, all of you will be able to get deductions you'll get additional refund on last year's taxes as well as reducing your 2009 taxes to the legal minimum, because I'm going to show you in this session how to reconstruct missing records. The IRS approved ways. But while we're handing these out, let me mention a record-keeping idea to you that on the surface causes a laugh, but it's not a laugh because how many of you keep a day planner or a scheduling diary of some sort? Just about everybody. Write everything in pencil. Not so that you can, when you get a notice, audit notice, you can go back and change things. Write every appointment in pencil. At the end of this is another part of my habit. At the end of every day, I look at my scheduling diary, and anything I had on my schedule for the day that I didn't do, I put the eraser end of the pencil down and I take it off. And I flip the pencil around, put the pointy end down, and put down when I reschedule it for. At the end of the year, I'm going to have something almost nobody has. I'm not going to have a record of my appointments for the year. I'm going to have a record of things I did for the year, because I correct at the end of every day. Take off the things you planned to do but didn't do. Add the things you hadn't planned to do but you did. And you've always got a current record. What should you do with your record, your diary on December 31st? Put it in your tax file. It'll become your best friend for defending you if necessary. Okay, this is the invitation I'd like to make to you. In the next 2 weeks, starting week after next, the last 2 weeks of this month, I'm going to take you through a process where you will know, you'll have a good working knowledge of all seven of these top tax deductions, not just the surface stuff I gave you today, but we're going to take them one at a time and talk through exactly how they work and how to adapt them to fit your tax circumstances. By the end of this 2 weeks, you will be putting the extra cash in your pocket. I'm going to show you how to determine what the value of your tax deductions are. And I'll show you exactly step by step how to go about making that change, just assuming you have a W-2 job. If you're full-time self-employed, you apply the same principles to your self-employment, estimated self-employment taxes. And finally, I'm going to show you how to keep bulletproof records in a minute a day. That's the first thing we're going to do in these 2 weeks. So here's how we do it. First of all, I'm going to talk you through these tax deductions one at a time or over a series of 4 1-hour teleconferences. We meet on Wednesday and Thursday nights for 2 weeks in a row. All calls are recorded, so if you have to miss one because of scheduling conflict, you'll have access to the call. You can listen to it over the internet or download an MP3 file and do it at your convenience. A full 1-hour telecoaching session twice a week for 2 weeks. You're also going to get all your questions answered, because following each of these telecoaching sessions, we roll immediately into a half hour or whatever time it takes, open Q&A session, live Q&A session. Ask an unlimited number of questions on an unlimited number of home business tax subjects. And this is the session where we make sure you know how to apply each one of these to your own tax circumstances. This is where, if I haven't pre-answered a question like, what do you do if you're single? This is where I answer it. You say, what do you do if you're single? Then I describe it for everybody. Okay, so this is going to happen four times over the next 2 weeks as well. Third, I want to make sure you have a copy of this. Home Business Tax Savings Made Easy. It's the subtitle is The More You Know, The Less You Owe. This says it all. This is a new fifth edition. Just came out a couple of months ago. So everything in there is current. I also want you to have the record-keeping system, so that's going to be included. It's a software record-keeping system. I am technologically challenged, and yet I could use this system without even reading the tutorial. It's that easy. This is how you keep your records in 1 to 2 minutes. It's one of the two methods of keeping records 1 or 2 minutes a day. And finally, tax laws change continually. 2 years ago, in 2008, Congress passed 500 changes to the tax code in 1 year. To which I respond, somebody's got too much time on their hands. Passed 500 changes. Anyway, their changes happen all the time. You need to know that what you're reading in here is accurate and current. So I'm going to take care of that for you for the rest of your life at no cost to you. Every time a tax law is changed that affects home-based businesses, or the IRS clarifies something, or the tax courts rule on something, I'll blast an email out to you and tell you, here's what just happened. First, I'll translate it into English. I'll send a plain English email out to you saying, here's what just happened, here's what to do about it, and here's how it affects you. You get that for life. And then finally, actually, I did not put this in the slide because I decided to do this later. I'm going to also give you, I just finished doing about a 75-minute audio tutorial, a step-by-step tutorial on the IRS-approved ways of reconstructing records. If you learned about tax deductions today that you would have qualified for last year, but you didn't know you should have kept records, on the 75-minute audio that I'm going to give you as a free bonus, you can it takes you through the process of how do you reconstruct those records. Some of them you can't reconstruct, but most of them you can if you can get at it by the first of the following year. That's why I said I really want to get all of you into this class I'm about to have, because I can help you the most. If you come in now, you can take it in a couple of weeks, and I can still help you reduce your 2010 taxes by $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. But I can help you go back and get $3,000 or $4,000 worth of additional refund from last year, and that you will get on April 15th. So that will be in addition to whatever other refund you would have gotten. So as you'll see from this handout, I sell this on my course right now on my website. It's $387, which is not a bad deal. When you think about the average person is going to put $100 cash in their pocket as a result of having this information, in less than 30 days, you've gotten your money back. Okay, so I never get an argument about the time, because by the end of the 4 weeks, they've been reimbursed for everything. But for us today, I want you to have that for $187. You automatically get a $200 tuition scholarship. So for $187. I don't want this to sound like a sales pitch, because if I have to sell you on something like this, then you got a problem already. This all sell itself. I'm talking about, will you give me less than 2 weeks worth of your tax refund, additional refund, if I give you knowledge that's going to reduce your taxes for the rest of your life by $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a year, with a 100% money back guarantee, that after. Not before. Don't call me tomorrow and say, I changed my mind, I want my money back. Take the four-part course, read the book, start with the record-keeping system, and anytime for the next year, if you say, I wish I hadn't spent that $187, I'll give it back to you. It's that simple. You take no risk whatsoever. And to make it even easier, because it makes my life easier. If you want to pay cash, you can have it for $150. Cash doesn't bounce. Cash doesn't go over credit limits. And that's becoming a real problem in this economy. I used to be able to go to a prepaid legal meeting like this and never even take cash. I'd take credit cards from everybody. They'd all slide through just like that. If one or two didn't go through, it would be because I couldn't read the number correctly. But now everybody's like right at the limit, it seems like, of all their credit cards. And that's just part of life today until they become successful like Mr. Hall. So if you're able to pay cash and want to, you give me $150 cash and you got the whole course. There's nothing left behind. Nothing left off. If you want that, that's your offer. Here's what you're going to get if you decide you want it. I'm going to be at that table right back there with Mariah and Caitlin. And this is what we're going to have. You're going to get the book, of course. Whoa. Hello there. I'm getting undressed too soon. Don't get excited. That's as far as it goes. There's no pole up here that I can use. The green sheet is going to be all the... This piece of paper is worth $200. I sell my four-part coaching program alone as a standalone for $200. This is the call-in information, the where you go for the recordings, the whole course for the four-part series. That's the green sheet. The yellow sheet is worth $47.95. That's how much you'd pay if you went on my website right now and ordered the software program. This tells you exactly how to download it. So you're going to have everything today. You're going to walk home with the book. You're going to be able to download the software and start with it today. You're going to know what the course schedule is. You can prepare for the course. This bottom half, the blue sheet, the bottom half tells you that I'm going to, with your email address, if you decide not to do this, that's fine, but hand in a sheet of paper with your email address on it, because I'll still put you on the list to be notified of tax law changes. Okay. And then finally, there's the audio that I mentioned. I threw in as a bonus. The top part of this tells you where you can go to download that automatically. So you've got everything if you decide to leave today. This is your fill-in-the-blanks receipt. The bottom of it says this purchase may be tax-deductible. Keep this receipt in your tax file. This is a tax-deductible purchase. If you're, and finally, if you're interested in these for recruiting or for orientation purposes, these today are like, these are less than my cost today. I sell these on my website at cost. I want to get these just came from the printer last week. So I want to get as many of these in circulation as I can, so you can get 100 of these for $25 or 50 of them for $15. That's all I'm going to say. If you want it, you know it's you. As I think it was, I forget which of our mentors has said this, but they said that the difference between the rich and the rest is the rich understand when something is in their best interest and they take immediate action on it. And the rest, well, that's why they're not rich. So if this is something you got to think over, then don't go back there. I will stay as long as there's anybody here to answer individual tax questions. If you got specific questions, after I've helped all the people going to the back of the book. By the way, back of the room, by the way, make sure and get me to autograph this. I'll get you a better price on eBay when you want to sell it. No, because it will get me to autograph it. Have me autograph it, because this is a great recruiting tool. If you give somebody the brochure and they say, I want to know more, you say, okay, I'm going to loan you this. But you say, look, this is my personally autographed copy. See, that's my name, autographed to me by the author. So I want this back in 2 days. You really read it today and tomorrow, or you don't, but I want it back in 2 days. So it helps to help you get it back, and it gives it more perceived value when you're using it as an informational tool with your prospects. Do you want to take any questions or wrap it here at this point? Okay, I will be in the back to let me first do the autographing and answer general questions, and then I will stay to answer any specific questions you've got about home business tax law. Thanks so much for inviting me.
All right. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, man, but I got thousands of dollars worth of value out of having Mr. Did you guys get the same value today? I'll tell you, I'm just glad that the fire marshal didn't show up here today, because, I mean, we had people out in the foyers that couldn't get a seat in here. Waiting to get this information. You guys, one of the 10 core commitments that we always tell people to do is personal development. Reading every single day. And we always, you know, say, hey, here's a few books that I highly recommend that you read. If you're gonna be doing personal development because your 2010 goal is, I'm gonna live the 10 core commitments, why not read How to Keep More Money? I mean, we read about how to make it, but why not read a book that teaches you how to keep it? And one thing that the top recruiters always, we don't feel like we're ever recruiting anybody, because I honestly believe if I'm sharing the business opportunity with you, I'm empowering you. I'm putting more money in your bank account. I'm helping you. I don't feel like I'm trying to sign you up. But that's because my belief level in knowing what the tax breaks do for business owners has put me at that point mentally. And if you're not there, if you ever feel a little bit squeamish about sharing the biz op with somebody, maybe you might want to just empower yourself just a little bit more with the knowledge. Now, man, the version that I have of this book that I got years and years ago doesn't say home business tax savings made easy. It says it's not what you make, it's what you keep that counts. I got one of the...
In fact, that's not right, and that's why I changed the title. Nobody can remember. It's how much you keep the count, not how much you make.
Yeah. So I have.
Simplify the title because nobody can remember it.
I have one of the real old versions. So obviously I need to upgrade my book, get the new tax laws and stuff like that. So I'm obviously going to be doing that today. In appreciation for Mr. Mueller taking his time to come out here. We have a nice coffee table book for him of all the incredible sites and places in the state of Utah that he can go see while he's back there signing books and getting you guys your autographed copies and stuff like that of his book. We're going to leave this up here on the front table for you. If you got any value out of him coming here today, come on up and put a few kind words in the front or the back, letting him know, thanking him for his time, because his time is worth a lot of money. So let's give it up again for Mr. Ron Mueller.
Thank you.
I want to say one last thing. If you're talking to a lot of people we're talking to now that are legitimately, honestly interested in the opportunity that we want to share with them, say, but I just can't. I just don't have the money. Now you say to them, if I could show you a way to increase your take-home pay from your current W-2 job. You got one of those, right? And they'll say, yeah. Or if they do, yeah, I have a W-2 job. If I could show you a way to bring home an extra $300 or more per month from that job starting immediately, would that make it possible for you to join me? And if they say no, they're not a real prospect after all. If they say yes, how do I do that? You say, here, read this. And this will tell them what they need to know. So it's possible. What I love about this is a labor of love. And it's why I sell it at cost. What I love about this is it makes it possible for someone who needs additional stream of income the most and who thinks they can't afford it to actually get into the business. Thank you.
Awesome. Give him a hand, guys. Give him a hand. All right. I see the lines are already forming back there. Patience, everybody. I know that everybody's going to want to get a copy of his book and get this training program. Real quickly, I'm going to bring up a couple individuals before we announce the name of the person that's coming in next month. And last month when I said Ron Mueller, there was a lot of people that looked at the person next to him and said, who, what? Just rest assured, you may not recognize the name of every person that we bring in, but I can promise you this. We search this nation far and wide, make sure that the talent that we're bringing in here is going to be top-notch and that you're going to get a huge bang for buck every single month when we bring a person in. And to just give a 30-second who's who on the person coming in and what they've learned from them, Mr. Mark Udy.
You guys got to see some of the incredible pictures of stuff that we got to do while we were out. And I can tell you, it was a lot of fun. It really was. We had a blast out there. But it wasn't those things that made all the difference. Is the little mentoring time that we got to spend with each individual person that made all the difference. The sitting in the hot tub and talking, we had big groups of people. But there were times when you got some one-on-one time with some of the leaders. Some of the people who were making six-figure income. Some people who were in the Millionaires Club. Those things... I mean, I got a chance to visit with the person coming, and he shared just a couple things that I know will help me take my business to six-figure income in the next year. I'm excited for it.
Awesome. Mr. Ryan Burns.
I met this gentleman a couple years ago, and it was neat to see somebody who was kind of starting at a similar time that I was starting. We were almost right on the nose, started at the same time. And he just seemed like a guy that I could never keep up with. And if you don't know, I'm kind of silently competitive. And every time, we'd go to something, he hit the same position, Now he's doing hundreds of counters more than I am every month in his organization. He's somebody I am very, very excited to get a few nuggets from.
Awesome. And you guys, I mean, we look at Mr. Burns and go, man, six-figure income in 2 years in the business. And like Mr. Burns said, this guy's numbers are blowing Mr. Burns' numbers out of the water. He's not only got his six-figure ring, he's got two other people that he's personally brought into the business that are knocking on the door of their six-figure rings, all in an extremely short period of time. Next month, February 6th, we have Mr. Brandon Samiego here in Utah. And I'll tell you, I'm so excited. I got to hang out this last week on the cruise ship with him, like a lot of the leaders. And when we had our little team get together, I mean, people were taking more notes on his training. He only had 15, 20 minutes on stage, but his training was just knocking them out of their socks. And people were like, oh my gosh, I could take hours of this. Can you hang around and talk to us tonight at dinner and stuff? And we're going to get him. He's going to come in for a Thursday, a Friday, and a Saturday. We'll have an incredible, fun thing to go do on Friday with him while he's here. We'll be letting you guys know the details as we kind of put that together. And also the cruise. Each time you buy a Super Saturday ticket while you're here, that goes in the drawing for the cruise. And I'd love to take you all on the cruise, but we're going to draw someone's name at the end of the year to go on the cruise with Mr. Samiego and a lot of the other millionaires and stuff in the company next year. If you buy 5 tickets today, you're going to get them for the price of 4. So you not only will you be able to be here next month, but some of the new people on your team that might have missed this event, didn't get a ticket. Guys, look around the room. This is the size of the room that we have next month. If everybody brought one person as a guest, we can't. We're over fire code. I mean, literally next month with the way things are growing right now, there's going to be people that walk out of this room today that don't buy a ticket and say, I'll just get one next month, that walk up, and they're going to walk up and we're going to have to say, sorry, the event has sold out. You're not going to be able to get in. I strongly encourage you, don't leave this event without having your ticket. If you want to get 5, you'll have 5 names in the hopper for the cruise next year. Next year, we've done Mexico for a few years, I think now 4 or 5 years we've done Mexico. So next year, guys, we're going to the Caribbean. Cruise to the Caribbean. All expenses paid for someone in the audience. Increase your chances on being there. Tickets are available out in the lobby for next month's Super Saturday. Tools and Mr. Mueller's course and stuff are available right here. Get your stuff. Make 2010 your best year ever. You guys, see you all next February 6th. Bye-bye. Sign this book for Mr. Mueller if you want to sign this book for Mr. Mueller.